provided by Thomas Allgaier and Frenis, based on the most relevant posts on LinkedIn about venture capital in CW 2024. Frenis is a B2B market research company working with enterprises to optimize their campaigns with account and executive insights far beyond AI. Welcome, Deep Divers. We're about to embark on a fascinating journey into the very latest top venture capital trends pulled directly from the most relevant posts on LinkedIn in the last couple of weeks.
Yeah.
Think of this as your curated shortcut to understanding what's truly moving the needle across M&A, private equity, venture capital, and consulting right now.
And this isn't just about skimming headlines, right? Our deep dive today will reveal actionable insights, maybe some surprising facts, and definitely the deeper context behind these trends. We're drawing directly from the voices shaping the industry on LinkedIn.
Mm-hmm.
So you can expect a pretty candid look at the evolving landscapes of fundraising, valuations, AIs, well, undeniable disruption, and the broader market shifts. It's all here, ready for us to unpack.
Okay, let's jump right in then. Our first major theme, founder-focused fundraising. Speed, story, and strategy. It seems the intense focus is really on how founders are effectively raising capital today.
It really is.
When we look at the most successful recent campaigns, what are the key levers founders are pulling? What's working?
Well, what's truly fascinating here is the absolute emphasis on speed and efficiency. Victor Sankin highlights the power of SAFEs, you know, simple agreements for future equity. They're quick, founder-friendly.
Right, they streamline things.
Exactly, for rapid rounds. The core idea is pure velocity. One standard document sharing cap table math up front, which, you know, builds immediate trust.
Okay.
We're seeing founders literally run their raise like a sprint. Think 10 to 15 investor calls in just 2 weeks.
Wow.
And crucially, securing a credible lead investor very early. We saw a real example where an AI startup landed $750K in 12 days with zero red lines.
Zero edits. That's incredibly fast.
Moving at warp speed.
That emphasis on speed is certainly compelling, but is it balanced by anything else? Because, you know, a compelling narrative still seems absolutely essential.
Totally.
Peter Sorgenfrey argues that in this high-velocity environment, it's the story, not just the sprint, that truly converts. He calls it "canation beats conviction," right?
Mm-hmm.
Emphasizing that it's about shifting from just selling to, well, storytelling.
Mm.
Sharing the real humans behind the numbers, showing your support system, owning your unique angle. That's what seems to win investors over.
And if we connect this to the bigger picture, strategic visibility ties directly into that narrative. Ben Boats points out that investors aren't just assessing what's true.
Okay.
They're looking at what's inevitable. Momentum, in this context, becomes a powerful narrative signal, not just some dry metric on a chart.
Right. It's about the feeling, the direction.
Exactly. Founders who raise at premium valuations, they're building this visibility before the pitch even happens. They're showing consistency, a logical narrative over time. It avoids ambiguity, which, you know, signals risk.
So if speed and a compelling story are key, what's a common pitfall founders must avoid in this high-stakes environment? It seems the spray and pray approach is a big one people are talking about.
Oh, definitely.
Carlo Rivas and Mike Schatzman both call this out. They say it's lazy and a major red flag.
It really is.
They emphasize that real VC relationships are built long before the pitch even happens.
Yeah. Gian Sierra adds that it's about structure, signal, and a clear narrative that gets them excited, not just, you know, racking up more investor names on a list. You can't just wing it, even if you feel confident.
Right. So this raises an important question.
Mm.
With all this talk of speed and narrative, what are investors actually looking for?
Good question. Dev Mitra's analysis sort of boils it down. Why do some startups get millions while others get ghosted? He says it comes down to four critical questions VCs use as non-negotiable filters.
Okay, what are they?
Basically, how you'll actually make money, who your real customers are, your path to scalable growth, and crucially, your strategy for handling risks.
It's about getting back to fundamentals then. But beyond just what investors want, Alejandro Cremades brings in this crucial perspective of mission-aligned money, right?
Mm-hmm, that's important.
Stressing that investors should support both your financial and your impact goals. Due diligence, he says, goes both ways. You should be checking them out, too.
Absolutely. And on the flip side of fundraising strategy, Nikhil Prasad Maroli offers a kind of cautionary tale for founders. He warns against raising excessively large VC rounds too early on.
Why that?
Well, he argues this creates immense pressure for the next round to hit a huge valuation. It sets the bar maybe too high too soon. He suggests a $500K to $1 raise is kind of a sweet spot for early experimentation.
Ah, Okay, so enough to build and test, but not so much pressure.
Exactly. Allows founders to truly build product and validate before chasing a much, much larger check.
Okay, shifting gears slightly, let's move to our second theme. Valuation and intangible metrics. Beyond this spreadsheet, it really seems the old spreadsheets and traditional metrics aren't telling the whole story anymore when it comes to valuing startups in this dynamic environment.
You're absolutely right. I mean, the baseline is still there, sure. Sarah Crawford offers a simplified guide to the venture capital method and, you know, estimating future exit value and then reverse engineering the present valuation.
Right, the standard approach.
Yeah, and Ruben Dominguez Ibar even provides a free Excel model for this, which makes it transparent. But this is definitely just the starting point now.
So if those traditional methods are proving maybe inadequate, where do we even begin to measure value now? I know Mohsin Syed has some really interesting thoughts on this growing disconnect, he calls it.
He does. He argues that modern valuation needs to consider things like momentum, shifts in user behavior, and those intangible assets, community, brand, learning velocity, things that don't fit neatly into old model.
Right, the squishier stuff that's hard to quantify,
right,
but clearly valuable.
Exactly. And Mark Alia unpacks this further with what he calls invisible KPIs. These aren't explicitly on a pitch deck, right?
Invisible KPIs. Like what?
Things like team chemistry, founder confidence, the sheer clarity of the narrative when they speak. He argues these intangibles shape an investor's conviction much more powerfully than any traction slide ever could. It's about the founder's presence, their alignment.
That makes a lot of sense. And this all ties back to understanding what VCs are looking for behind the scenes, doesn't it? Nicole DeTomaso explains the critical importance of investment memos.
Mm-hmm. Those internal docs.
Yeah, those internal documents summarizing a startup's potential. Knowing what's inside these memos, what VCs are truly evaluating internally, helps founders craft a pitch that genuinely resonates and, you know, highlights the key factors investors really care about.
Precisely. It's about speaking their language.
Okay, now, let's shift our focus to something that's everywhere. AI. Our third theme. AI and technology disruption. The new VC playbook. How is this revolutionary technology not just impacting startups, but fundamentally transforming the VC landscape itself?
Oh, it's a seismic shift. Jason M. Lemkin observed that VCs with meaningful AI exposure are outperforming peers.
Really?
Yeah, which he suggests points to an aptitude gap, not just a capital gap. Those who get AI, who understand its potential, are simply ahead of the curve.
Interesting. So it's about the VCs themselves adapting.
Definitely. And Mohammed Chaudhry adds that for founders, AI isn't some shortcut in fundraising, but it's like a superpower. It allows them to think at scale, rapidly analyze investor profiles, draft emails, forecast dilution scenarios.
Wow. Okay. That's a significant advantage. Itamar Novick really dives into this with the rise of solo VCs and micro VCs.
Yeah, his take is fascinating.
He suggests the most dangerous VC investor in 2025 might be one person with a laptop.
Ha!
This individual could leverage AI for automated deal flow, summarizing diligence, even auto-generating term sheets. He says it compresses decision cycles from weeks to maybe just hours.
He calls it the Spotifyfication of VC. Lower barriers, smarter, faster tools. It's really changing the game.
Spotifyfication, I like that.
And this isn't just theory. DeepSing describes designing an automated VC system that dramatically slashes manual deal tracking time. He went from like 8 hours down to just 75 minutes daily.
That's huge.
Yeah, significantly increasing signal capture for early stage funds. It's about using these agentic workflows to process vast amounts of data that humans just, well, can't manage efficiently.
Speaking of incredible AI applications, I heard about this AI VC investment super agent that sounds almost revolutionary for founders. What's Henry Shi's insight on this?
It's pretty mind-blowing. He shares an example of an AI-powered agent that can analyze a deck, model projections, and then generate a founder-friendly, non-dilutive term sheet in under 5 minutes.
Under 5 minutes? Seriously?
Seriously. It's transparent, unbiased, and incredibly fast. It could potentially eliminate months of traditional fundraising cycles for certain types of funding.
That could change everything for founders.
It really could. And for those looking for the hottest niches within AI, Margot Pasquale highlights Google Cloud's report on 7 game-changing VC trends in AI.
Okay.
This report gives critical guidance on thematic allocation for both founders and investors. It points towards lucrative areas like AI-driven enterprise software or, you know, new frontiers in cybersecurity and privacy.
Very useful. Okay, broadening our discussion now to the overall market for our fourth theme, market outlook and strategic shifts. Things are certainly dynamic out there. So What does this all mean for the broader venture capital ecosystem right now? What's the vibe?
Well, Louis LaHoop provides a crucial look at the Q1 2025 global funding picture. On the surface, it looks like it surged to $126.3 billion.
That sounds massive.
It does, but here's the catch. If you remove OpenAI's huge $40 billion round, the picture looks, as he puts it, less rosy.
Okay, so one outlier skewed the numbers.
Big time. Deal counts are actually down, and that signals consolidation around later stage capital efficient companies, you know, ones with proven traction. It's truly a quality over quantity market right now. Maturity over raw potential.
Right. Emily M. Zhang summarizes this quite succinctly, doesn't she? Describing the current state of VC as bifurcation.
Exactly. Bifurcation. Meaning we're seeing robust late stage rounds for the clear category leaders, the winners.
Mm-hmm.
But at the same time, leaner pre-seed checks for the very early ventures. It's almost like two different markets operating simultaneously.
A tale of two markets.
Yeah.
And this bifurcated reality raises a concern highlighted by Chris Jones, who worries that true pre-seed funding is collapsing.
Yeah, that's a real worry. He points out this disproportionately affects underrepresented founders. And his argument is if we don't fix the top of the funnel, many founders won't even get a chance to build.
That's a critical point.
Yeah.
Yet we do see some counterpoints, some pockets of hope in other areas.
Right.
Fareed Fazua observes that seed funds and accelerators are actively filling structural gaps in emerging markets.
That's true. They're stepping up.
They're helping to mature local venture ecosystems by providing patient capital, cross-market connectivity, basically making paths toward series of readiness much smoother for founders in those regions.
It's a really proactive effort to bridge those gaps, which is encouraging. Rohit Yadav describes the broader VC market itself as being in a kind of dissonance phase.
Dissonance phase. What does he mean by that?
He argues the traditional VC model is sort of stuck in a different era. It's facing these accelerating innovation cycles, constrained liquidity, rigid capital structures.
This is out of sync.
Exactly, out of sync with the pace of change. He proposes a strategic blueprint to fix it, emphasizing adopting new frameworks and, you know, institutionalizing discipline to evolve with the times.
It certainly sounds like a period of immense adaptation. Mm. Is this dissonance phase more of a growing pain, or could it fundamentally reshape the VC model permanently?
That's the big question, isn't it? Ella Maloney Cook's insight reinforces this pressure, stating that U.S. venture funds are actually booming with an accelerating pace of capital formation and increasing competition.
So more money chasing deals, making it harder to stand out.
Precisely.
Hmm.
This makes differentiation incredibly crucial for both funds and the founders looking to attract that capital.
And we're seeing a fascinating shift in behavior, too. Tanya Ridding and Dr. Marin Celine Schweitzer both observe that VCs are behaving more like PE, private equity,
mm-hmm.
in their risk appetite.
Mm-hmm. Demanding more operational exits.
Right. So focusing more on proven profitability and operational rigor rather than just pure potential.
Exactly. It's blurring the lines between venture capital and private equity, a definite trend towards demanding more certainty.
Okay. Let's focus now on our Sith theme, liquidity and exit landscape, the long game. This is, you know, the ultimate goal for investors, but it's often one of the most challenging aspects for both founders and funders.
It really is. And Peter Adams highlights what he calls a curious paradox for angels and early stage VCs right now.
A paradox. How so?
Well, while AI has certainly accelerated startup development.
Yeah, things build faster.
Right. But the path to liquidity, you know, getting their initial investment back and the actual exit timelines has significantly elongated. Gotten longer.
So startups develop faster but take longer to exit.
Exactly. This squeezes the time to liquidity for those early investors, making some question if the whole angel investing model is maybe broken.
That certainly sounds like a significant challenge for angels. But are there perhaps new opportunities emerging from these elongated timelines, or is it really just a broken model?
Well, people are trying innovative solutions. Jason Calacanis, for example, has explored ideas like tokenized VC funds.
Tokenized funds, how would that work?
The idea is it could potentially unlock liquidity for LPs, the limited partners, the investors in the fund. It might allow their stakes to be traded based on performance, maybe even before the full fund matures.
Interesting, making private markets a bit more dynamic.
Potentially, yeah. But Peter Walker's data from Carta really reinforces the difficulty here. He shows that more recent VC vintages, you know, funds raised in specific recent years, have a lower share of funds returning any capital after 5 years.
Wow, none at all after 5 years.
A lower share, yeah. It points to a palpable lack of liquidity across the board. Javier Avalos's Chime example really illustrates the dilemma investors face. Do you take a great, say, 100x return early?
Mm-hmm.
Or do you hold on for a potentially much higher but also riskier outcome years down the line? It's a tough call for fund managers balancing patient capital with needing to show returns.
Definitely a balancing act. And for a more localized perspective, Kiran Mehta outlines a UK-specific strategy that sounds quite different.
Yeah, quite focused. He suggests focusing solely on single-round pre-seed investing with zero follow-on capital.
No follow-on at all. Why?
He argues that later stage valuations in the UK make achieving those traditional venture level returns almost impossible because the exit sizes are typically smaller compared to the US.
So the strategy is get in super early at a low valuation and aim for a quicker, albeit potentially smaller, exit.
That seems to be the logic, yeah. Adapt to the local market reality.
All right, finally, for our sixth theme, let's explore strategic partnerships and ecosystem evolution. This looks at the collaborative aspects of the VC world and how the broader ecosystem is adapting and changing.
Right, because it's not just about individual funds or startups. Jorg Lanch offers a clear framework for corporate venture capital or CVC teams, specifically when they're making follow-on investment decisions.
Okay, what's the key takeaway there?
He emphasizes strategic fit for the parent corporation over purely financial IRR internal rate of return. Yes. It really highlights the dual goals of CVC. Yes, financial return, but also importantly, strategic alignment with the mothership.
That dual goal is critical for CVCs. And speaking of CVC insights, Nicholas Savage is launching a new Corporate Venturing Insider LinkedIn newsletter. Sounds useful.
Yeah, it aims to share insights from top industry voices like Gustavo Schwed, who stresses not being intellectually dishonest in investing. It sounds like it could be a great resource for anyone in that corporate venturing space.
Good to know. And what about connecting people across borders?
Well, Anka Roman mentions the Green Match event, which sounds interesting. It's specifically designed to foster direct connections between investors and startups across Europe.
So facilitating cross-border deal flow.
Exactly. A tangible effort to build bridges and encourage collaboration within the European venture ecosystem.
And shifting to specific sectors, I know Hugo Rauch has a valuable resource for climate tech.
Oh, yeah. His European climate VC list. It's fantastic. It catalogs over 100 funds actively investing in decarbonization, energy, mobility, other climate-focused areas.
Wow, over 100.
Yeah, it clearly shows a deepening pool of capital dedicated to green initiatives across Europe. There's real momentum there.
That's great to see. But this also raises an important point about diversity within the ecosystem, doesn't it? Anna Jones's post revealed a pretty stark statistic about the UK.
It's quite sobering. Women-led UK startups, despite making up nearly 14% of the market.
Which is significant.
Right. They receive only 2.4% of investments over £10 million.
Only 2.4%. That's a huge disparity.
It really is. The data points clearly to systemic barriers and underscores the urgent need for persistent pressure and, frankly, policy change to address this imbalance.
Absolutely. So thinking about funding strategically beyond just traditional VC, how are companies navigating this? Henrik Grimm and Simon Hill offer insights on using debt financing alongside VC.
Yeah, they make a good point. They argue resilient businesses don't necessarily choose between debt and equity, but rather know when to use each.
So it's about timing and purpose.
Exactly. Debt, they say, fills gaps VC isn't meant for. It can protect margin and help avoid unnecessary dilution at the wrong time.
And for assessing those deals, Zach Ellison provides a practical 3F framework for evaluating the VC sponsors in venture debt deals.
Right. Footprint, fit, and follow through. He says this framework is crucial for assessing risk and reward because the quality of the equity sponsor, the VC, can truly make or break the success of the debt deal itself.
Makes sense. The partners matter. Now, Raviv Sapir offers a pretty provocative take, arguing that most LPs suck.
Yeah, that's blunt.
What's his reasoning?
He contends that many limited partners, the investors in VC funds, often lack a deep understanding of venture capital itself. They end up chasing brands and short-term gains instead of patiently supporting truly innovative, maybe less obvious opportunities.
So things like impatient money, FOMO investing distorting the market.
That's his argument, yeah, that it can negatively impact how VCs operate.
Interesting perspective. On a more optimistic note, perhaps, Patricia Jamelska points out that VCs are undeniably getting smarter by increasingly integrating data insights, moving beyond just gut feel investing. She sees this as fundamentally upgrading the playbook for better, more informed decision making.
Using data more effectively. That makes sense.
Finally, Greg Head wraps things up, looking at VC funding myths, particularly ones prevalent in Europe. He highlights Chris Earler's bootstrap success with Comex.io.
Right, building without VC.
Exactly, emphasizing the freedom it offers over taking early outside capital. And Sharon Maroon also reinforces this, viewing VC funding as a potential double-edged sword if founders lose control too early.
Yeah, it's not automatically a badge of honor.
Right, it's not an accolade unless it's truly the right fit for that specific company's journey and goals.
And just to tie it all together neatly, Aditya Farad's conversation with Sushant Mitra sounds like a must-listen. It's described as a masterclass on what investors actually look for in early-stage startups and, just as importantly, what red flags make them walk away immediately.
Sounds invaluable for any founder thinking about fundraising.
Absolutely. Direct insight from the source.
If you enjoyed this deep dive, new editions drop every 2 weeks. Also, check out our other deep dives on private equity, M&A, and strategy consulting. Thank you for tuning in to this exploration of the latest venture capital trends. We encourage you to subscribe to The Deep Dive for more curated insights into the topics that matter to you.